time of the week again. It's time for Chit Chat Across the Pond. This is episode number 416 being recorded on December 8th, I think it is, if I look correctly here. And our guest this week is Antonio Rosario. He's a professional photographer and instructor based in Brooklyn, New York. And after we say hey, we'll talk a little bit about how we air quote met. Nice to have you on the show, Antonio.
Great to be here, Allison. Thanks so much for having me on your show, finally, after so long.
Yeah, it seems like we were trying to remember whether you'd been on the show before. We've been on other shows together. I got to know Antonio through Bart Bouchat's Let's Talk Photography show and had a really good time listening to him. And we've been chatting and arguing and debating and sending emails back and forth on all kinds of photography subjects. Since I am a snap shooter and he's a professional photographer, I feel it's my place, you know, to argue with you, right?
Yes. And I like to be argued with.
Yeah, I think that's the problem, is you like it as much as I do. So to give people a little background on where you come from, you're probably best known for your switch to manual company, if you will, with Tom Martinez, correct?
Yeah, that's pretty much how I'm known these days.
Describe what that is.
Well, Tom had this. I met Tom a few years ago in our neighborhood, and I found out he was a photographer and started chatting, and he had this great idea that to start a little education group system where we would, you know, teach people who are, you know, enthusiastic about photography how to shoot in manual, because everybody's shooting using the automatic controls on their cameras. And he said, "Well, we can teach people to use manual." And I thought that was such a great idea, because I've always liked to teach sort of the old ways to learn how to do photography the way I learned photography, which was obviously manual photography. I'm dating myself here. So, so we went with that. We started up a little, workshop that we would run in Brooklyn, and we would have it maybe once a month, where we would show people, you know, in a 1.5 hour little class, how to use the manual controls on the camera. And then we do photo walks.
And so this is people come physically to you in Brooklyn and learn how to do this, right?
Yeah. We were doing it for a while at a bar in Red Hook, New York, Red Hook, Brooklyn, which is the waterfront in Brooklyn. We needed a classroom. So we staged it in this bar, and then we'd walk around the waterfront and take pictures with everybody. So that's how we started. And switch to manual was pretty much, you know, what are we going to call it? Switch to manual. That's what you're literally switching the camera to manual.
So I need help naming things. That's a perfect name. There is no doubt what it is this is about. That's for sure. I like just the name of that, and listening to you on Bart's show has really inspired me to, on very rare occasions, go completely manual. And I think I always send you my shots whenever I do it, because it's happened like 4 times in 2 years. But it's so empowering to go off that automatic dial and just really go full manual. It's been really fun and challenging, I think.
It is quite a challenge. And I kind of, when I tell my students and the people who come to our class, you know, why would I want to shoot in manual? Because the camera does automatic. And so there's nothing wrong with automatic. You know, it's great to, in many circumstances, but to understand why the camera is making certain decisions, you know, switching your camera into manual and understanding what the aperture is doing, what the shutter speeds are doing, what the ISO is doing, having all that knowledge is helpful for when the camera starts doing things and you don't know why it's doing it. So, we always say, it's sort of like in math class, you used to, you know, want to use your calculator, but the instructors say, well, learn how to do the calculations first on paper. And then when you're taking the test, you can use the calculator because it saves you some time.
Right. But if you don't understand how it works, you could get the wrong answer because of a typo on a calculator. And then I believe you miss the planet when that happens, right?
Yes. If you don't notice. I've heard that happen.
That's what I drilled into my kids' heads. You know, you have to understand it so that when you look at it, you don't miss the planet when you don't realize that you use the wrong units, right?
I'm going to write that down. Miss the planet.
We are, of course, referring to a U.S. space mission, right? Or was that France? I forget.
No, it was U.S.
I think it was U.S. where we actually, we were working with some other companies in Europe, and one was using metric and one was using standard or imperial units. And
Whoops.
Was it Mars? Anyway, yeah, we missed. Mars. Yeah, we missed. Didn't land on you. She went right on by.
Can you imagine that poor guy sitting there? Wait, oh, you meant meters? I mean, feet? Oh, darn it.
Or she might have had the same.
She, that's true.
That was the biggest
I think it was in history. I think it was a guy. I can't imagine.
No, it could have been. I like to always say both. But if you don't look at the big picture of it, I mean, you should have been able to tell by the numbers that you were looking at that this is off by some large factor. But in the case of photography, you're talking about like if you're getting a whole lot of grain in your photo, maybe that's because it's choosing an ISO that is higher than what your camera can do.
Yeah. Or if you're, the picture is way too in focus, as you would say, and you say, why, the subject is not separated from the background. It's like, why am I getting too much depth of field and, understanding that. So, and the camera doesn't care when it's using the automatic controls, it's not making any creative decisions. It's trying to just give you the best exposure possible. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. So turning those off or understanding why it's doing that can at least remove some of the frustration when you're looking at your pictures. Like, oh, I know why it did that. X, Y, and Z. So
I have to say, though, there have been times where I sit there with my fancy pants, good camera, and I'm dialing all these controls and everything. And I finally go, oh, screw it. And I grab my iPhone and it takes a better picture. Please tell me that's happened to you.
I do that quite often, especially now that I have my iPhone 6S. It's such a nice camera on that. But
okay, good.
Yeah, sometimes you're taking out that camera and saying, I got to start futzing with controls. No, you just want to take a picture.
Well, this is after I've already futzed with the controls and I can't get it right.
Yeah. I think that's why, we have the phones have completely eliminated the point and shoot categories because, you're carrying with it all the time. And so you just want to take a picture and you want to share it or do whatever you want. That's perfect, for a phone, but carrying a camera that can switch into manual, you do have to spend more time. You still have to understand some of the things that are going on. And so for me, it's kind of second nature. So I carry my camera around my neck all the time, so I actually might go with my camera because that's natural for me.
Right. So one of the reasons I wanted to have you on is because you do a lot of black and white photography, and this is something you and I were arguing where I'm ill-equipped for the fight. I brought a whip to a gunfight, but I'm going to argue with you anyway. But one of the things you said was making a good black and white photo is not a matter of slapping on a filter. And that really stuck with me because I don't think people appreciate what you probably go through. You do a lot of black and white photography. You do street photography. So yeah, I wanted to kind of get an idea of, why you do so much black and white and what it is about black and white that you think really it really brings to the table that makes it stand out. And then maybe we can get into how you go about doing that.
Can I go back in time a little bit?
Sure. Absolutely.
That'd be okay. Yeah. So. I started off my photography career world life by shooting black and white film because that's the kind of camera I had. And that was the film I could afford. And it was a way to learn how to process pictures. You can't really process pictures in a dark room, color pictures in a dark room so easily. The fact is you can process black and white film in your bathroom. Because it's just, you have to get certain temperatures right, but the temperatures weren't so critical for the black and white development. And as long as you had a dark room, you could process black and white. But color, you had to use a machine. You had to go through a lot of processes with temperatures and stuff like that. So processing in your own home was easier with black and white. And so for me, being a kid, I started doing photography when I was like 12. Maybe 11 or 12. And my dad was a photographer too, but... yeah. So when I was like 12, I started developing my own film and it was easy to do. So I started with black and white and fast forward into, college and then my career, I worked at a photo agency, a stock photo agency called the Image Bank. And part of my job was, I had a couple of jobs there. Part of it was being a librarian, putting all the stock pictures into the files. And then another part was being a photo editor. And so that was commercial photography business. And the vast majority of that work at the place I worked at was color. And I just sort of naturally fell into stock photography. So I started shooting color transparencies, slides for a very long time. In fact, I think I accumulated probably close to a 250,000, maybe 300,000 transparencies shot in my career.
Oh, wow.
As a stock photographer. Yeah. Which I still have like boxes of them here that the agency no longer needed. So they sent them all back. So my world is flooded with color photography for the bulk of my career. And just as digital started to creep in and I got rid of film, I still shot color and color. But at some point, my commercial photography, you know, the way stock photography is now, everybody's shooting stock photography because digital cameras, people are shooting and submitting to iStock and Getty. And my business as a stock photographer took a dive.
I bet.
Yeah, big time. So at some point in the past 5 years, I wanted to sort of reinvent myself. And so I started doing a little bit more street photography. And that sort of coincided with me buying a certain kind of printer. And I'm bringing that up for a reason. But I never really shot black and white photography digital too much because I didn't know what to do with it. This is before shooting street photography. I just didn't know, you know, so what am I going to do with it? I can't really print it. I didn't really have a good printer. Epson at some point came out with this Epson, what do I have, a 3800? One of the best black and white digital printers. It's a good color printer too. It's a great color printer, but it does fantastic digital black and white. And when I got this printer, I realized now I can start shooting black and white digitally and have a meaning to do it because now I can print out beautiful black and white prints. So that corresponded about the time I started shooting street photography. And street photography just sort of naturally progressed into black and white because I kind of always wanted to do it. And I didn't do it while I was shooting stock because I was too busy shooting color stock. And street photography can't be used commercially. So I wasn't shooting that. But once I got the reason, I had this printer and I said, well, now I can start printing black and white. I said, well, now I can start shooting black and white because I have something to do with it. So it's sort of a convoluted story.
So it went from the printer backwards.
In a way, yeah. Because I'm very much about, like, black and white. You can print color any place. And, you know, all the Epson printers print pretty good color. A lot of them didn't print good black and white, but you can send your pictures to Costco and get good color prints or, you know, whatever. But getting a really good black and white print, something that I would be proud to sort of hang on my wall, was very difficult, at least to do from, you know, not spending a fortune and sending the pictures out to some expensive lab. So when I got this printer, and I originally got it just for shooting color, I mean, for printing color, but I knew it did a good black and white. And I started testing the black and white, and I was like, this is now I can invest my time in doing, you know, anything in black and white, not just street photography, but, you know, New York landscapes. I shoot a lot of stuff in the city, you know, the urban landscapes. And to me, that looks great in black and white too, as well. And so,
What is it that pulls you towards the black and white?
Well, you know, again, dating myself, it's the nostalgia of having grown up doing it. So it's kind of fun to get back into it a little bit. Also, the sort of the history of photography is mostly black and white because that's how it started. So I really enjoy that sort of throwback about shooting black and white and having it look classic. You know, we're all sort of have that embedded in our, you know, psyche in some way that black and white means old.
Yeah. Yeah.
At least people of a certain age. I don't know about really young kids if they have that.
By the way, people listening are probably going to think you're 75 years old. So.
No, I just turned 51. So
there you go. You're a baby. That. Yeah. By the way, while we've been chatting, something's been really bothering me. Before we started, Antonio and I were trying to figure out had he ever been on Chit Chat Across the Pond, and I didn't remember him being on it, but I remembered we'd been on shows together. I just figured it out. You were on Chit Chat Across the Pond with Bart when I was on vacation last March.
Oh, right.
So you've
right,
been on
right,
the
right.
show. They've heard you before on the show, but I wasn't there at the time.
That's correct. Right. He was filling in for you. Yeah.
Yeah. On episode number 460 on March 2nd. There it is.
It was just me and him, I think, right?
Yeah. So this is really sort of meta. But I couldn't let you keep going. I had to get that out there because it was really bugging me going, I could have sworn I'd heard you on Chit Chat.
That's great. Thanks for reminding me.
Got to be a listener. Okay, so you got your black and white printer, and that motivates you to start getting back into it. And you're specifically talk about a little bit about what street photography is. And why that's in black and white. Yeah.
It's a good question. And it's also not always in black and white.
But it tends to be, right?
Yeah. I would say if we're going to, you know, put it on a map, the majority of it might be, you know, but I see, there's a lot of good color street photographers. Joel Meyerowitz, for anybody listening, go search his work out. He's incredible street photographer and does color. He's one of my favorite photographers. But, you know, the thing about shooting in the street in color is that this goes into why shoot black and white in the first place. You know, part of what I like about black and white is it really focused on forms and shapes and colors forms and shapes, contrast and textures.
So not distracted by the color.
Correct. I mean, color can sometimes be distracting. So
yeah,
it's not always, but I think a lot of it is, it can be, especially in a New York City street where there's lots of different things going on, in the background, and you're trying to capture, say, someone's face or their body. And, you know, all of a sudden you're looking at, you know, a red neon sign in the background and a yellow cab, and where is your eye going? So removing the color can sort of focus your attention onto the subject, which is more often than not a person. So that I find, you know, is very helpful. It just removes one thing I don't have to worry about. Is okay. Color, but lately I post
to make it look gritty. It tends to make it look, well, like New York. I mean,
it looks urban. I would say, you know, yes, it does.
People don't look happy in black and white, or the people you photograph really, really interesting looking people. But there's a grimness to it, and it makes me think of like the Depression, and I don't find myself skipping around with joy after looking at your photos, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I'm just saying it evokes the grittiness of life more than like you also photograph the Mermaid Parade.
Yeah,
that's joy and happiness and color and rainbows, right?
Right. When I decide to present the pictures in color. I think this year I went and I shot some stuff and I left it in black and white, or I converted it to black and white, to get that grittiness that you're talking about. Because sometimes
so you take a parade of happiness and joy and color and you make it gritty and depressing.
Remove it all the color. I think what you're
hitting
on.
Thanks for coming, Antonio.
Okay. I think what you're hitting on though is, the fact that black and white can tap into emotions very, very easily. Again, it's not dissing color, and you know whether or not you start getting feedback. Oh, he's wrong about color. There's like color. There's beautifully emotional pictures in color, but I think there's something about black and white that sort of automatically taps into an emotional response. It can tend to be grim. You're also seeing pictures that I've edited. So I'm choosing subjects as I'm going out there to photograph and then display to the world. So I'm making an editorial decision, A, by who I'm shooting and how I'm presenting it. So I'm certainly giving you a view, but it's not necessarily the way New York is. Although, you know, you walk around the street, even with a camera and looking in color, people just seem to have a natural, you know, on their face. Downturn smile. You know, it's just, I don't see anybody walking around whistling and happy because they might be taken away for, you know, someone might think they're crazy, you know,
especially in New York.
Yeah. Although I try to walk around and smile sometimes, but it's, you know,
I do. I say hi to people and it drives them crazy. It really, really irritates them.
Yeah. But
especially, especially teenagers. Say hi to teenagers.
Yes. Oh, that freaks them out. Yeah.
Oh, it's awesome.
Good morning. It's very catches me off guard when someone I'm walking down the street and someone says good morning to me, and I'm like good morning, and all of a sudden I break into a smile because I'm not expecting it. So, but yeah, there is a grittiness, there is a roughness to it, but it's interesting you're saying that because black and white sort of presents that naturally. It's removing color. It's going after shapes and light. So
are you looking for shapes and light when you're taking the photo?
I would say, you know, half the time I am, you know, the other half I'm looking for somebody who's interesting looking. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's, I'll see, especially now in the winter when the light is really nice, the sunlight gets really low all day long. And so it looks like the golden hour pretty much all day.
Oh, this is, I'm sorry, I've got to interrupt and make a rant about the Switch to Manual podcast and about Let's Talk Photography. So it started, it started with Bart on Let's Talk Photography, and he had Kenny Lee and Gazmaz on his show. I think it was Kenny, right? I don't think you were on this one. And the subject is give people an assignment to get. So it's, sometimes you get in a rut in photography where you just don't feel like taking pictures. But if you have an assignment like find the letters of the alphabet in natural sources, you know, like two trees at an angle making an A.
I think I was on that show.
Oh, you were? Okay. Yeah. I hated it because there and on Switch to Manual, you did the same thing. And the problem is none of it applies to me. So Gaz gets on there and he talks about you should take pictures of fungi like toadstools. Right, what do you need to get fungus? You need rain. It hasn't rained here since 1974, right? So then, and then Bart says, well, how about if you, you know, take four pictures of the same thing of four different seasons? And I thought about taking a photograph of my house and just putting up four of them in a grid and sending and posting on Bart's site, you know, to just say, okay, here's, you know, spring, summer, fall, winter for in my house. So I'm listening to you and Tom on Switch to Manual, and you're talking about how great it is just to take pictures in the rain. And you're talking about rain hoods and you want little umbrellas for your heads to cover your camera equipment and you talk about the great reflections in the water.
Okay, I guess.
It literally has not rained here. I mean it I think we might be under 5 inches a year now. I mean it's
really sorry to hear that. That's not good.
It turns out it's causing some pretty scary issues going on here. Yeah. But it's just from a photographer's standpoint. Where, oh, and then you talk about in the fog or in the low light, the gray light. It's like, okay, I need you to do an episode on what do you do when it's always sunny, it's always bright, there's no clouds. Bart talks about big puffy white clouds. We don't even have clouds.
You know? Well, Tom now lives in Arizona, so we'll probably get to that because
good. His
he's
entire
telling me
summer
that the weather is like it's perfect there every day. I'm like, oh man, I want to kill him. Well, you know, you mentioned that, and you know, people say like don't go out in the middle of the day at 12 o'clock and take pictures. It's the worst light possible. And I was like, well, you know, I go out at 12 o'clock in the middle of the day and I shoot pictures, but you know, sometimes those, in color, maybe pictures like at that time of day might not be great, but black and white pictures at that time of day actually could look really, really good because again, you're sort of
you're getting the starkness,
Yeah. The harshness of it, of the light, you know, and the fact that you're removing the color from the picture could actually work. So as you're saying that, I'm thinking, wow, you know, maybe that would be a good time to go out and tackle black and white photography during the middle of the day. I don't know.
Let's get a little bit into process then. So there's a couple different ways you can do this. You can shoot black and white in your camera, or you can shoot in JPEG or RAW and then process it with tools. What is your process? And also talk about your RAW JPEG opinion. I find that very interesting what you do there.
Okay, so I'm sorry. I'm chuckling because before I bought my current Fuji X100T mirrorless camera, which I would marry if there was a law, I love this camera for a lot of reasons. I won't go into it, but it's a great carrying around camera. But before I was doing that, I'm shooting with my Nikon, and I'm a big proponent of telling people to shoot RAW, shoot RAW, shoot RAW, shoot RAW. You know, you can shoot JPEGs as backups, or if you need to hand them to a client, or you just want to see the pictures fast. It's like, you know, it doesn't take up that much space. But I was like, shoot RAW and process at home.
And just for one quick interlude, just for people who don't know what that means, is that RAW is basically all of the information that your camera sensor has acquired, not compressed into a JPEG. So think about like a WAV file in a recording on a CD. You smash it into an MP3 into iTunes. It's the same kind of thing. So you have all of the information possible, a lot that maybe your eye can't even see, but it allows you to adjust the photo if there's problems or things you want to shift.
Right. It's direct information from the camera's sensor without any intervening processing or anything like that. And I like to think of it as a digital negative. So for people who are still remembering what film is like, you would take pictures and you get your negatives back. And the negatives were pretty much, you know, the capture of the scene. And there was no additional processing on that picture. So what it does allow you to do is come back, you know, sit in front of your computer and use Lightroom or Photoshop or whatever program you want to work with.
Photos.
Yeah, with the photos. That
Photos app. Used,
yeah, Photos. I would say yes, I haven't used that. I don't like it.
But. I'm going to do a session with you where I teach you what I can do with Photos.
Okay.
And Mac Fun together. Well,
yeah, so come back, work on your pictures, and then, you know, and then process them like you would if you were going to a dark room, and then you're done. But so I'm doing that with my Nikon camera all the time. But I recently, like I said, in the past year, actually 2 years, I've been working with Fuji cameras. Fuji camera also lets you shoot RAW pictures plus JPEG simultaneously.
A lot of cameras do.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, I think pretty much all camera that shoots RAW will let you shoot both simultaneously. But for some reason, Fuji has done something to their camera sensors that are making the JPEGs that come out of the camera look pretty gosh darn good. So what I've always gone to say is like, shoot RAW, you know, if you don't need the JPEGs, throw them out, just work with RAW. Now I'm kind of the other way around, but with my Fuji camera only. Not with any of my other cameras, mainly because I think Fuji has done a very, very good job of processing the picture inside the camera.
Okay.
And so, yeah. And so that's what the JPEG is the camera takes the raw file and adds some processing, which you can customize, and then spits out a, you know, kind of a finished picture. And I'm actually very satisfied with what they're doing with the processing in the camera. Now, I wasn't very happy with Nikon processing, which is why I won't really shoot JPEGs on my Nikon, because they don't look so good, but Fuji's do. So my process is now the other way around. I'm still shooting RAW and JPEGs on my Fuji camera when I'm doing pretty much anything, street photography or anything with this camera, but I'm now using the JPEG from the camera instead of the RAW. And the RAW goes into my library and Lightroom and gets, you know, gets backed up, and it's, you know, my original digital negative. But I'm using the JPEG from the camera.
Okay. That does get into a question Pat Dengler made me promise to ask you, was what is your workflow on that? Do you keep both? Okay. So you do keep both.
I do keep both. My workflow has shifted a lot, mainly because my age, I don't want to say this kind of thing, but I'm really getting
75 and all.
Yeah, no, but there's something like, again, I said, like, you know, a few years ago, my photography is sort of shifting, my career is shifting. And I kind of want to go back to the way things used to be for me a long time ago. And, you know, a long time ago, I would take pictures and I might drop them off at a lab, have them processed. I might do it if it's black and white, I might process it myself, but basically get the processing out of my hands and then get the pictures back. And lately I've been not very happy with sitting in front of my computer, in front of Photoshop or Lightroom, endlessly processing pictures. And I've kind of wanted to just be done with the picture when I shoot it.
Oh, and so that's blasphemy.
I know it is. And I still have to process pictures because there are jobs I do where the pictures need to be processed and I do it. But for this phase of my life with street photography and this new camera, I've kind of wanted to move out of that. I wanted to spend as little time as possible tweaking the picture. So I've decided to reduce my workflow. And it's totally, like, it's bizarro land now, because I am not processing in Lightroom or Photoshop. What I'm doing is I'm taking the pictures off my camera. I'm using the Wi-Fi built into my camera. The Fuji's, a lot of the mirrorless cameras have Wi-Fi built in, so you can transfer them to, you know, your phone or your iPad. Right. So I'm transferring them to either my iPhone or my iPad, generally my iPad, and I'm using Snapseed, which
really?
Is an app.
Oh, yes. No, George from Tulsa is going to lose his mind. He is always talking about it. He's always all about the most, the best thing in the world. You really should just use Snapseed. We will never hear the end of it now.
I've used a lot of programs. Well, let me finish this. So I'll do some minor tweaks in Snapseed, and then I'll output that in, you know, the picture, the final picture into Flickr, then export it back into Lightroom. So now I have my processed picture. The reason I use Snapseed is Snapseed used to be, the software behind it used to be part of NIC, N-I-K filters.
Sure. You know who owns Snapseed now though, right? You know, Google. That's a Mac Fun tool.
Snapseed is...
Oh, wait, no, not Snapseed. I'm sorry, I'm thinking of SnapSelect. Sorry, Google.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Okay.
Snapseed is a Google product.
Uh-huh.
They bought NIC filters. I used to like NIC filters when I was using I use them in Photoshop. And to go backwards a little bit, Nick created the raw processing software for Nikon.
And
it was a really, Nikon had a I can't remember the name of the software now. Nikon had a very good raw processing program, and it would come with all their cameras and you would process it. And I found out that Nick were the people who made the technology, and they had this thing called U-point technology, which basically you drop these points on the pictures and you could process little bits and pieces of the pictures with these points, sort of like,
like Snapseed.
Like Snapseed, yes. And so anyway, evolved to the future. You know, Google bought Nick. I started to cry because I thought, now my Nick filters are now gone. Mm-hmm. And then they came out with Snapseed. Now, I think Snapseed was already out.
Are you using Snapseed on the iPad, or is that as a Mac app?
There is a Mac app. It's not as good, frankly, as the one. I think they've only been updating the one on the mobile devices.
Okay.
So anyway, some of this legacy technology with the points has now made it to Snapseed, and Google is still using them. And I find that on an iPad, a lot of the processing programs can be very, very destructive to the picture. And I find that Snapseed is actually one of the most gentle of the processings. You can tweak the picture very slightly. Now, when you are processing a JPEG picture, those pictures can tend to get kind of wrecked fast with any kind of processing because of the limitations of JPEG. So you want to tweak the file, you know, the least amount without destroying it. And I think Snapseed is one of those applications that actually is can be very gentle to the file. So that's my process. I'm taking my pictures. Usually I'm walking to work. I'm taking some shots, and then I'm on the train or I'm at my job waiting to start my job, and I'm transferring the pictures from my camera to my iPad, and I'm making some choices about processing.
And so you're not using Lightroom on the iPad to do this? You're using Snapseed?
Absolutely not. I am not. I do not like Lightroom on the iPad, mainly because it's not saving full resolution pictures.
And
I can't be bothered by programs that don't save the full resolution. So I don't know why they do that. And that's how it first came out. I don't know if they've fixed that since then, but I have not gotten into that workflow. So no, I don't use Lightroom on that. And again, it's, you know, using Lightroom means getting into more involved processing, and I really want to try to keep the whole thing as simple as I can. And so I have my own little sort of recipe that I take pictures with, depending on the subject matter, that I run through Snapseed, and I'm like, this is how I wanted black and white pictures to look. Especially when I'm doing black and white. I mean, I do some color. I do color processing as well. But the black and white, it's like all the years since I've been photographing color and I've wanted to get back into black and white, this is the way I wanted it to look. And so I've got this. It's sort of like a little dream come true, if that's making any sense.
Yeah, yeah. So now you got it in Snapseed. You've done some processing. You post it to social media at that point?
Pretty much, yeah. I'm posting it on Instagram generally, and then cross-posting to Twitter just to say, hey, this is what I've done.
Yeah, so let's talk about that a little bit. I wanted to talk about how important social media and the podcast is to your workflow. So you're saying Instagram is the main thing.
Yeah.
And then that causes that you can automatically cause that to go to Flickr. I'm sorry, to Twitter.
Twitter, yeah.
And then you also send the Instagram to Facebook?
Occasionally. I'm not. Facebook is mostly my personal life a little bit.
Okay.
I mean, I do have a photographer page, and I post there now and then.
Okay.
But I don't spend
more
as much
Instagram
time.
Than anything.
More Instagram than anything, and mainly because I've found that the street photography community there is really strong. I'm amazed by some of the photography I see from people there, and so a while back, I was on Instagram, and then I quit for a while when Facebook announced their weird terms and conditions that a lot of photographers had knee-jerk reactions to. I was one of them. And eventually, someone who I admire said, you know, don't worry about Facebook's terms and conditions too much. And I was like, okay. So I went back to Instagram. And I decided, instead of Instagram being some place to share pictures of my cats and my, you know, hairdo or whatever, which I don't have any hair, so but I decided to make it my the repository of of this project that I've started, shooting street photography in my neighborhood in New York. And that's pretty much all I post there.
See, I really like talking to you about this because you look at social media almost 180 degrees from the way I do. I look at Instagram as that's what those kids today are doing. and that it is all about your hairdo and when you know going out on Saturday night kind of photos. It never occurred to me that a serious photographer would look at that as a good place to make their portfolio known.
Yeah. Well,
I was going to say, and I was going to point everybody to your Flickr page, but as I'm looking at the Flickr page, I'm realizing everybody's going to think I'm nuts because there's only, I think, one black and white photo in that entire bunch.
My Flickr is sort of, I'll upload street shots sort of in a bunch. So you have to sort of go back in time and find them. But
okay. Well, I went in a circle and the stuff that's in the photo stream, there was one really cool looking older truck and it's there in color and in black and white. It must have gone in a circle when it could have kept going. Okay.
Yeah, no, I've been posting a lot more stuff up there. I mean, I love Flickr.
There's the mermaid parade and it's all in color. People are going to think I'm nuts.
Yeah. I mean, the mermaid parade stuff, the way Flickr works is that I was actually posting pictures for other people. I shot some stuff.
Okay.
So there's a ton of these same people on Flickr.
Okay.
So that they could share the pictures. But,
I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
But if you look at my albums, the albums are where things are sort of broken up a little bit more. Yeah.
Okay.
The photo stream is kind of a,
so I would have never, I got to figure out this Instagram thing as I just, I have these kids today. I can't understand why they do this.
That's exactly what I thought at first with Instagram. And I got really frustrated with it because my timeline was showing up with people I could care less about, was showing things that I could care less about. And, and I started to realize that Instagram was, people were speaking a language on Instagram. Actually, they're speaking many different languages. Like it was like a country, maybe like the United States, where there are different states and everybody has a different culture. And the state that I was in initially in Instagram was not the correct state.
State of mind, you mean?
No, state. I'm using it as think of Instagram as the United States. It's like when I first was on Instagram, I was in North Dakota. And this is nothing wrong with North Dakota. It just wasn't the place that fit me. And okay. So I left and I moved. And let's say I moved now to, you know, Massachusetts, and Massachusetts in Instagram is the state for me. I'm finding like,
you found your tribe.
I found my tribe. Thank you. Thank you. That's what I'm looking for. I found the tribe. And Instagram has sort of evolved over the years too. And so I decided I'm only going to follow street photographers or photography that is really impressive to me. I'm not following anybody. I follow friends. You know, I got people who are posting, who are close friends, and I'm seeing their cats and stuff like that. But the strangers that I don't know that I'm following are mostly photographers or photography that I'm impressed with. And so I find it as a gallery, awesome gallery.
Well, so it sounds like you're saying it's like any social media. If you go into Twitter and just turn it on, first of all, nothing happens. If you follow everybody, everybody else is following, then it's just a hodgepodge of junk. But if you go in and you say, I am interested in X, you know, I'm interested in politics, then follow people who talk about politics. I'm interested in photography, follow photographers. I'm interested in tech, follow that. I'm into religion. But if you try to mix them all up and just follow everything, it's just junk.
Yeah.
In North Dakota instead of Massachusetts.
Massachusetts, yeah. And then you think, why am I here? And what's the point?
Yeah. And you blame the tool automatically when it does that.
We see a lot of that happening. People say, I don't know why people are on Twitter. I'm like, I said, Twitter is one of the greatest places for me. I've got my tribes that I'm part of, and I find it really useful. And the same thing with Instagram. When I got back onto Instagram, it's sort of in time with me doing the street photography. And I have a real goal that, like, it's not that I want to, I'm not stroke, you know, follow me, I'm so important, but I want to get a following of people that look at my work and I want that to increase. And that's just like anybody, I think, who wants to show their work, you know, anybody who wants to put their pictures up in a gallery or, you know, sell their pictures. You want eyes on target, you know? And I decided to be really focused to just do this one thing on Instagram, mostly street photography. I'll post some other things now and then, but generally it's in this one direction. And, you know, I want to build up an audience one by one, if someone says, I really like your photography, I want, you know, just like what I'm doing there, because I want to follow people whose photography I like. So I have a definite strategy on Instagram. Mainly it's just to increase the amount of people who can see my street photography.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know where it's going to go. I'm not really about just throwing pictures out into the wild and hoping for the best. I'm right now in, like I said, I'm doing other things. I work on a television show in Brooklyn and it's, you know, what pays the bills. And I like that, but I really want to reinvent my photography again. I want to, you know, just turned 50 a year and a half ago. That's when I got the Fuji camera, by the way. It was my
present for yourself.
My midlife crisis camera.
We've been talking for about 40 minutes and I haven't gotten you to talk yet about what I thought we were going to talk about.
Oh, really?
Well, I've enjoyed every minute of it. I'm not regretting it, but I want to keep going a little bit longer because the statement you made was doing good black and white photography is not a matter of slapping on a filter. So what is it you do? What kind of workflow kind of stuff do you do to make a photo into a really good black and white photo?
I need to think about it. and I'm not saying I got to think about the answer for you. I need to think about what I'm trying to present when I'm making the picture.
Okay. Misery again, apparently.
Well, I'm just showing people in their natural states. I mean, really, people, like I said, walk around with this presence, and it's New York, so not everybody's, you know, it's not Mayberry or something like that. People are cheering and whistling, but I want people to focus on the main subject of the picture, and it's always, in my case, it tends to be a person, generally a single person, and I want to eliminate distractions. I want to reminisce. I want to create the grittiness that you're talking about. But not all the time does black and white work. If you actually go to my Instagram account, somebody actually a little while ago says, you know, I would love to see what you're doing, but color. And for some reason that struck a note when they said it to me. And I was like, you know what? Yeah, it would be interesting to just dabble into color a little bit. So I very occasionally look at my subject and said, the color in this picture works with the subject. And if you look at those pictures that I posted that are in color and they stand out because the vast majority of my pictures that I'm posting are black and white, but those few color ones stand out and you can look at them and you can see why I went to color.
Yeah. So I'm looking at a lot of great black and white shots. And then there's a guy wearing a bright orange construction shirt thing and a bright orange cone next to him.
Right. And then the background is green.
Yeah.
There's this wall. He's a construction worker. Uh-huh. And I photographed on the way to work and I was looking at that. And as a black and white picture, you know, he's kind of in shadow. You don't really see his face too much, and there wasn't much I could do to bring that out because it would look really fake if I tried to lighten his face. So I left it dark, but you know, his skin color is really nice. It's a dark, rich brown. And I said, but what really strikes me is that there's a contrasting color. There's the orange and the green. Mm-hmm. And you know, converting that to black and white, it would just be a bunch of gray tones and it wouldn't work.
But it wouldn't jump out like it does. You have another one of a woman in a beautiful scarf with like 86 colors in it. That would just be a woman in a scarf without that, right?
Right. And sometimes I do want to show that color. But I've taken pictures of these women in my neighborhood. A lot of them are wearing the scarves. There are a lot of Muslim. It's a big Muslim community here. It's also a big Jewish community. But the Muslim women wear these very colorful outfits. And I will, on occasion, choose just to go black and white because I'm really interested in just the patterns of their outfits. And
there's Hasidic Jew men with the hats and the big beards, and they're made for black and white.
They're made
right?
for black and white. Yes, yeah. I it's almost a given that a picture like that with gentlemen wearing those outfits will go black and white just because the shot is already monochromatic.
Yeah. So, yeah. Because the outfit and the hat and the shirt and the jacket and everything. Yeah. So
it's often the subject that's going to dictate what I do. It's not an automatic, like, you look at a picture and say, well, you know, I'm just going to make it black and white. That's not a good enough reason to make a black and white picture. So that's what I mean by slapping a filter on. It's like people say, well, this picture doesn't look good in color. So I'm just going to, it might not, you know, just because you convert it to black and white, it's not going to make it a good picture. You know, that's not enough of a reason. You got to think about the not just the when are you going to convert, you can think about the why you're going to convert the picture.
Are you when you do convert it, what is it you do? I'm going to get this out of you yet. What do you do other than so if you just desaturate a photo from the color spectrum, it'll be black and white?
No, well, technically not. It'll be gray. It'll be a gray.
Okay. But
black and white pictures are not desaturated. I mean, they don't have color in it. So in a sense,
well, I know in Photoshop there's a desaturation slider, and if you slide
you
it
never
all
want to use left. You never want to use that for converting to black and white.
Oh, why?
All that does is here's an experiment for you. You'll love this. Make a rainbow pattern file in Photoshop. So red, green, blue, you know, just the seven rainbow colors, right?
All right.
Perfect, you know, and use the numbers. Make them pure red, pure blue. Put that in there. And so you have this rainbow. Now go to the desaturate filter and desaturate and see what color.
What will happen? Will they all look identical?
It'll be a gray square. Ooh. There'll be no distinguishing bands of color.
Really? Okay. Right.
So desaturating is just getting rid of the color. It's not changing the brightness. Black and white is really about luminance values, the brightness and darkness of a picture.
Okay.
So when you're converting to black and white, you're really looking for what's bright and what's dark, and those are what's helping to make the conversion. You're not just taking color away. It's not a removal of color.
Okay. All right, we're getting somewhere. I've gotten a little bit of information out of you now. Squeezing it out. What do the tools you use do instead?
What I will do is emphasize a tone in the picture. Let's say that. So perhaps if I wanted to deal with someone with like someone's skin tone, I might process the picture in such a way that the skin tone is emphasized in the black and white. So for instance, if you convert your color picture, sorry, I live in New York City, so you hear the sirens outside.
As long as they're not coming for you.
They're not coming for me. They just come for people. It's a typical thing. But anyway, a picture of a person, if I convert it to just black and white, their skin tone will look probably just, you know, some shade of gray. But say I want to lighten their skin tone, then I might convert the black and white and use what's called using a red filter in black and white. So convert to black and white with a red filter. What does that mean? Let's see if I can explain this. It would mean as if you would look at their skin through a red filter, because there's a lot of red in Caucasian skin.
Okay.
If you put a red filter, in fact, if you held it up to your eyes, and mm-hmm. you looked at somebody with, you know, like a slightly pinkish skin, their skin would turn lighter. Because
Caucasian skin would turn lighter with a red filter.
Exactly.
Okay.
Most skins have some kind of red in them, just because we're human beings. That's how we are. Skin tones tend to get lighter with a red filter. So if I wanted to emphasize someone's skin tone, I might convert black and white and use a red filter so that their skin tones would turn slightly lighter in the conversion. And likewise, I could use a green filter, which is the opposite of red in light, and darken skin tones. So someone who is really tan or a dark-skinned person, if I converted that black and white picture using a green filter, their skin tones would look very, very dark. And so I'm looking at a picture and saying, what do I want to emphasize in the picture? The same thing is the same case is with skies, for instance. If you want to, if you're where you are, you said there's only one cloud there. So,
well, sometimes there's either cloud or no clouds.
No clouds.
There's not clouds.
Clouds. Well, for instance, if you wanted to darken the sky, if you took a picture and your sky is very blue and you wanted to, in black and white, have that sky be very dark, then you would use a red filter when you converted, because the red would actually take some of the blue away.
So you are just slapping a filter on it then.
No, you're choosing to emphasize and de-emphasize certain tones.
Okay.
So if you just, that's sort of a long way of saying it, but if you just desaturate, you're really just eliminating colors. When you're filtering your black and white conversion, and that's beyond the scope of this discussion, but it's easy to figure that out. You are choosing then to say, I want skins lighter, I want skies darker, I want, this color to be brighter, I want that color to be brighter in the black and white version.
So if you take a color that's already there and you add the filter for that color, that makes it lighter. So skin has has red in it, therefore adding red makes it lighter.
Right.
And adding green is, I guess, at the opposite end, and that's why it makes skin darker.
Exactly. And so, I'm looking at a shot and maybe a person has a certain skin tone, and they're when I do my basic black and white conversion, they might be blending into the background because the background will also turn gray. And I somehow want to emphasize them more or de-emphasize them more. And so I will then choose a filter conversion to do that with. So I want them to stand out. I want them to proceed. And so there are creative choices that are being made when I'm converting to black and white. So again, it's not just, hey, the picture's going to look better. If a picture doesn't look good in color, it most likely is not going to look good in black and white. Black and white is not a panacea for...
You know what else I figured out is making an HDR of a bad photo doesn't do anything either.
An HDR black and white.
Yeah, right. Well, I was talking to Stephen Getz about this because I had this photo that I really like, and I did some HDR on it, and I did the bracketing thing, and I used my tools, and when I get done, it's like it's okay. Because it just isn't a great photo, I think, is the problem. And I keep thinking, if I just had the tools, I'm not saying I don't get great photos, but that one was definitely one I didn't get what I wanted yet.
That can happen. And I also think it could happen the other way around too. It's like, one time I was taking a picture of a moonrise over Brooklyn. I'll send you the link if you're interested, but, I face east. So the moon is rising and I've got buildings there and it's got, the sky is kind of pink and there's a pink glow and the sky's kind of dark, it's like the dusky dark blue, and the color picture I'm looking at, I was like, it's not remarkable. It's a, I got this great full moon, but there's nothing that's standing out for it. And I said, well, now let me see what it looks like in black and white. And of course I'm remembering a very famous Ansel Adams picture called Moonrise over Hernandez. In New Mexico. And it's a beautiful picture of this little shanty town on the bottom. He's got a moon rising and the moon is in this black sky. But you can tell that it's still daylight because it's dusk, because you can still see, that there's sunlight hitting the buildings. And I said, you know what? This picture that I'm creating reminds me of that. And so I processed the picture in black and white. I made the sky really dark so that the moon really came out, but the buildings still had some light because the sun was still setting, and I called it Moonrise over Brooklyn as a homage to
tip of the hat
Ansel Adams. But it was a case of the color picture was just not working, but I wasn't seeing it for what it was. To me, the picture was a black and white picture, and so the conversion helped my creativity come out. I'm going to say, and the picture was a great, I like it. It's one of my favorite pictures. In fact, I need to print it and hang it up on my wall because I need to do that with most of my pictures. I don't usually do that, hang up my own pictures. But it's rare for me to say, I really like my own picture strong enough that I want to print it and hang it up on my wall. So black and white can, and vice versa. You could look at a picture and you shot it for black and white. And you say, it's not working. It's like, well, why don't you go back to the original color, which is, the great thing that we could do now with digital. Back when you were shooting film, if you shot in black and white, you were done.
Couldn't go back. I have noticed that in anticipation of this conversation is I started looking for things that should have been in black and white. And I think I tagged you in a picture I took of a little statue of a little boy and a little girl where the boy is telling the girl a secret. And when I looked at it, it shouldn't have been in color. In real life, it looked wrong because it was kind of blue and it had a tan background behind it. And it looked like it should be black and white. And I messed around with it a bunch and I was pretty happy with what I came up with.
I like that you also put that sort of opposite vignette on it so that you lightened the edges.
Yeah.
Sort of darkened them. Yeah. Yeah, that really worked. Yeah.
Right, right. I tried it the other way first, and it just looks stupid. And yeah, I was just dragging sliders to see what they did. And I did that when I went, whoa. I mean, it just jumped out when I did that because it got rid of the distraction, I think, from the side. So, and dialing that back and forth. By the way, I did want to tell you, so I did that one using MacFun's tools, and I really would like you to take a look at Tonality by MacFun. One of the engineers that did a lot of the math is actually a math professor, I believe, is from NIC.
Ah.
So if that can't hook you into at least giving it a try.
I'm looking at my doc right now, and I happen to see that I purchased it. I didn't even know that I had it.
Oh, that's funny.
I knew I had Intensify Pro, but I didn't realize I had Tonality. I might have gotten it like as a bundle.
Yeah. So a lot of, there've been a lot of publicity about Intensify or about the Creative Kit 2016. So you'll see Intensify CK. That is simply Intensify Pro if bought with all these other tools. It's all the same thing. The only difference is if you're in the if you get the Mac App Store version, you'll have fewer filters and controls. So if you've got Intensify or you've got Tonality Pro, you have the real one.
I do. Okay. Yeah.
You're probably using it in everything.
Well, actually, when I do my black and white conversions in Photoshop or Lightroom, I don't use the built-in tools. I do use NIC Silver Effects Pro.
Yeah, so try this as it says a plugin. If you open it, it'll install the latest version of the plugin into Photoshop. I'd be real curious to see what you think. I think it's swell, but I don't know any better. I did buy Silver Effects, by the way, I did one photo with it.
I'm sure it's more what's the word? I mean, I'm doing some black and white conversion in Snapseed because I'll shoot all my stuff in color, you know, and then because I'm shooting raw, and then I'll convert later to black and white. And I can't imagine that Tonality Pro is any, you know, worse or better than Snapseed. It's probably better because it's a desktop app rather than an iOS app.
Yeah, I love your workflow though. That so much of it is I want to be able to do it on the fly. Because I think one of the problems with photography is you get really excited about doing it. You go out and you take all the pictures and you get home and you go, oh,
yeah,
I got 150 photos.
Right.
You know, and you and you move on and then you leave crap on your desktop. At least that's my workflow.
I wanted to move away from that a bit because I want to get excited by my pictures again. And I don't want it to become a chore. And, you know, here's my soapbox thing is that, you know, I use Lightroom. Because it's what I've been sticking with, but I miss Aperture so very much back because it really, as an app sitting on my computer, it didn't make me feel like I was pushing files around. It made me feel like a photographer again. I can't, it's something intangible and maybe that's just the way Apple's UI was, but there was something intangible about it. I sit there, I'm like, wow, I feel like I'm a photographer. Lightroom, it's what I have and it, you know, I've got, I have over 500,000 files on there, pictures. And I really feel like I'm like, you know, it's the Microsoft Excel of photo programs. And I have to use it because it's
what everybody uses. Yeah.
It's what everybody uses, what's available. But I miss Aperture and I wish Aperture had not died on the vine. You know, if they had stayed in parity with Lightroom, I would have been using it today. But again, the idea is like, you know, I do like processing my picture on my iPad, and I'm a little jealous about your iPad Pro.
Yeah, you need that.
Yeah, well,
heavens.
it's not going to happen for a while. But, you know, that idea of doing something with my fingers, you know, which is I feel like I'm making something with my hands a little bit, even when I'm processing on my iPhone, you know, I've got this, you know, you move your finger back and forth. So there's a feeling to it that I like. And I'm sort of wanting to get back to that a little. I don't want to mess with a mouse anymore and a keyboard. So it doesn't mean I've given up that other way of processing. Not at all. It's just, you know, going back to there's something about this whole black and white Fuji retro style camera iPad processing that is really hearkening to back when photography was a little simpler.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what sort of the overall goal is for me. It's like, I want to go back to the simple. And then street photography is kind of some of the most simple photography. If you're not, you know, getting chased by somebody who doesn't want their picture taken, but that hasn't happened to me yet. Knock on wood here, but, it's a pure style of taking photography. I'm not saying street photography is the only pure way to do it. I mean, there's landscape photography, which I like to do as well. But this is what I'm doing in New York City and what I can do on a daily basis. And it just feels, I know, back to the basics, which is what, you know, maybe switch to manual is all about too. It's just really getting back to that, let's understand what the emphasis is of photography. It's capturing pictures and sharing them and making it as simple as possible.
Well, if that isn't a way to bring the whole conversation full circle to give us a good ending point, I don't know what is. So in the show notes, I've been taking little notes while we've been chatting. I have put the switchtomanual.com website. I've got your Instagram account at AM Rosario. We've got your Flickr at AM Rosario. And I put a link to specifically the street shots that you've done. And on Twitter, your AM Rosario. Did I miss anything?
Right. Pretty much AM Rosario everybody. And, switchtomanual.com and our podcast too.
Oh, sorry. Do the podcast too.
The street shot. Yeah. Tom and I, we about a year ago started a podcast, Street Shots, mainly because our workshops kind of slowed down, but we figured we want to still give out we want to still talk to people about photography. So we started the Street Shots podcast and, we try to stick to twice a month, if we can, since Tom's moved to Arizona, it's a little trickier.
Yeah, but you guys have been doing a great job with that. I really, really enjoy it. Except when you're talking about how nice it is when it rains and take photographs. But put down on your list of requests that I really want to see. I really want to see you talk about how to take photos in completely bright, brilliant sunlight.
I'm sure Tom will have a lot to say about that since his new digs are under the sun now.
Right. Yeah, all right. But, I really appreciate having you on. This has been a lot of fun. I told you 30 to 45 minutes and I kept you going for an hour. I apologize for that, but I was having too much fun.
I'm having too much fun too. And I hope everybody forgives me for talking so much, but I like to talk.
That's what happens when you invite podcasters on. All right. I hope you can come back again soon.
Anytime, Allison. This is such a pleasure.
I hope you've enjoyed this episode of Chit Chat Across the Pond. This is an unsponsored show, so if you like what you hear, you can help support the show by using the Amazon affiliate link over on podfeed.com. Heck, put a review up in iTunes and tell your friends about the podcast too. I love feedback, so please do write to me at allison@podfeed.com and join in the conversation with other listeners in our Google Plus community at podfeed.com/Google+. Thanks for listening and stay subscribed.